Hi everyone, it's Monica Helleberg here, Chairman of World Freedom Alliance, and I'm honored to be here with Dolores Cahill, President of World Freedom Alliance, and Willem Engel from Holland, one of the foremost freedom fighters in Europe, I would say. And would you like to introduce yourself, Willem, and also say a little bit about what has been going on with you and in Holland right now? Because
Well, thanks for inviting me. Thanks for inviting me, and thanks for this opportunity to share my story. And the last few weeks have gone pretty viral around the world. I have been doing many interviews about my arrest and also the grounds of these arrests, of course. We started our organization, Virus Truth, in May 2020, because that was when we had the idea to start a court case against the Dutch state. And we thought, we have very good evidence, so after one court case, we can go home again and start our daily lives. And that turned into a full-scale action group doing a lot of court cases. We have prosecuted done over 20 court cases against the Dutch state and some other affiliate organizations. We have organized a lot of demonstrations, and we have our own channel, Video Waarheid, Video Truth, in which we try to bring a lot of facts to the table, because the debate has been shunned from the old media. And with it, we have been quite effectively, we have been able to make headlines at least once a month, and the last few weeks it's almost daily. Of course, it's a very skewed image, and what we see is that there is a lot of framing and demonizing in the old media, and that's why it's so important that we do these broadcasts to really inform the public.
And maybe Willem, I know you have just had an interesting court case today, the 19th of April, 2022. If you want to talk about what happened today, or to frame it what you've been doing.
So, of course, among others, we've been fighting the illegal experimentation on the population of the whole world, I should say. And this was the second appeal case. So we have done multiple injunctions. Of course, the state did not have any answer. So their defense becomes less and less, and sometimes it's only 3 pages, while we submit at least 100 pages. Now, this was a very interesting one, because we had the injunction, and in the injunction verdict, there was a lot in the verdict that proved that we are admissible, that our foundation is pursuing an ideal goal, and therefore we can use certain civil law codes. The defense did not want to defend the statements of experimental status, of gene therapeutic nature, of being unsafe and unproven and unnecessary. I think those are the 5 main points. Of course, what happens constantly is that the judges do not want to rule. So although they said in the first verdict, you are admissible, but still we don't rule, because this is a matter of a scientific debate, and that is not appropriate in the court of law, especially not with these short procedures. So what we did next to the Court of Appeal, we also started a longer procedure in which you can do a lot of discovery. Knowing that there is still a longer procedure, these judges were put under a lot of pressure. And in the meantime, because this takes a few months, I think the verdict was from the 29th of November last year, 2021. Today, we got the verdict of the appeal case. The hearing was on the 10th of March, and that was coincidentally also the date when the command was given to incarcerate me, and those might be connected.
To arrest you, yeah, and put you in prison. Arrest me.
And we'll get to that later on, but first about this verdict. So what was spoken by the judges today is that they acknowledge the verdict of the injunction, and therefore we are not admissible. And that really shows that there is no court of law. These people are professional criminals, or they are put under enormous pressure and somebody else writes these verdicts. It must be one of those cases. So of course, I immediately made an appointment with the police to press charges against these judges. And maybe they themselves are the victim of malfeasance, or how do you say that, blackmailing or extortion?
Coercion, yeah.
Coercion. So that is something that the police has to look into. It also shows, and this is one of the reasons why we do these court cases, so to bring the facts to the table. And in that sense, we use the courts as a stage to inform the public, because there is no consent possible without being informed. A second part is to show that the defense does not have any arguments. Constantly, the defense, so the country's lawyer or the state's lawyer, they say, well, it's not gene therapy. And we react like, okay, where's the proof? No, just because we say so. So they want to define something that has been legally well defined over the course of the last 30 years, I would say. So it is bringing facts, showing that the emperor has no clothes. And of course, the third part, and that is important for when the change or the shift comes and we win this uphill battle, is making files, making dossiers, so that once we get to these tribunals, that we can submit all the evidence. So that's a step in that direction. But these court cases become so surrealistic that these judges are completely misusing any code of conduct which you would expect in a court of law, that we've also shown that there is no savior, there is no effectively no rule of law. There are activists within the media, within science, within politics, but also within these court systems. They have been completely co-opted and taken over by these ideologues or fanatics that want to push this Agenda 2030.
Yeah, amazing work, Willem. We're so happy to work together with you and so support you in any way we can. But please tell us about what happened when you got arrested, and how do you think it was connected to the work that you're doing, how you're pushing back in the court system?
Yes.
And because this, we see this happening, it's almost like patterns, you see, that is happening all over Europe. I know there are other arrests. There's also in Sweden arrests of people where they're trying to make them look like they're psychiatrically ill or psychologically ill and putting them away for lifetime, etc. So it seems to be these waves of almost coordinated waves against the freedom fighters today. And especially the ones that are standing up in the courts and are standing up.
Yes. So the ones who are exposing the most are the targets. And it's not almost, it is definitely coordinated. There is no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. So I will tell a few details about my own arrests and then fan out to what we've been seeing all over Europe, and specifically the groups of organizers of demonstrations, lawyers, and people who do civil journalism or citizen journalism, the vloggers. These specific groups are targeted to silence them. And in my file, it's actually very open that the public prosecutor misuses their power to silence me. They're very open about it. It's not a debate anymore. If you look at my first arrest in 2020, it already mentioned that they wanted to stop me demonstrating for 10 days because a law had to be passed for these COVID regulations, and they didn't want me to be in the capital to demonstrate. And that shows the intent of the adversary. It has nothing to do with any crime. It has something to do with exposing their crimes. Now, these series of arrests that happened from the 16th of March, the first arrest was outside of the act. Now, if you arrest somebody outside of the act, you have to have very strong grounds to do so. Of course, they were not there. The people who arrested me were masked. They were unrecognizable as police officers. And that was very strange because I already had a court case for what they said is sedition or incitement. So I was very surprised why they would arrest me when I would have to be in court in 2 weeks anyway. But of course,
and you know, did the people dressed up, Wilhelm, did they are required under the law to show you identification and to give their name? Did they do that?
No. So they're not required to give their name. They're required to identify themselves. And very briefly, they showed some kind of identification. I couldn't really read it, but I will get to that because the second arrest, they bluntly refused to identify themselves after asking them four times. And that shows that those arrests were illegal to begin with. But also the reasoning behind these arrests are purely political. The first arrest on the 16th of March was in front of the voting booth. And the second one, and we have this in the file that the public prosecutor admits, they wanted to keep me from speaking at a demonstration. It was not for breaking the specific condition on the suspension of my incarceration. It was really to stop me from speaking at a demonstration. That's why they, with a few vehicles, pulled me off the highway, handcuffed me again, refused to identify themselves, refused to tell my girlfriend where they were taking me. They took me to another precinct. So this was very, very sketchy. And I think it was done with the idea to have a maximum impact for terror and intimidation. Now, the beauty of it is I stayed very calm. We filmed everything and this went viral. So it completely backfired. The public opinion has shifted 180 degrees. We had people from the other side that are politically my opponents actually advocating my release because this was such a gross violation of the mandate that the public prosecutor had, but also a gross violation of the freedom of speech. So instead of the discussion being about incitement or sedition, now it shifted completely to the freedom of speech. And I think that is justfully so. So in the second hearing in front of the judges, they actually ruled in favor of my release on the grounds that the restrictions of the suspension were too harsh because effectively they would muzzle me and would be a prohibition to speak.
And maybe, Wilhelm, just I guess what's important to reiterate is that no one is above the law, right? So anyone arresting you or detaining you, infringing on your freedom to travel even, or anyone in the courts, you know, if they do unlawful behavior themselves. So, for example, in Ireland, if a policeman did that, it's a much harsher penalty. You know, it is unlawfully detaining someone or kidnapping, but it's 20 years in prison. And if the judge colludes in that, it's also 20 years in prison for the judge. And very simply, no one is above the law, whether they are dressed up as police or whether they're dressed up as judges in the courts, you know, in no matter what country you're in.
You're absolutely right. Of course, we are talking about Holland, which is possibly, legally speaking, the most corrupt country in the world. So we have the Pikmeer arrest, which basically comes down to if a civil servant breaks the law, we have to assume he did it to aid the state, and therefore he or she cannot be prosecuted personally. It is very crazy, and of course, this is in gross violation with Article 6 of the European Treaty of Human Rights. But apparently there is no rule of law. We have advocated these articles, so a fair trial, that's what Article 6 is about, Article 5 about freedom, Article 3 about torture or inhumane treatment, Article 10 about freedom of speech. And we see that these judges are having a difficult time because, of course, now we're coming to very fundamental, basic human rights, universal human rights. And the release was also based on this. The reasoning of the public prosecutor was that I surrendered my free speech voluntarily. That, first of all, is not possible. I did not surrender anything. Second of all, it's coerced. If you are in prison, you cannot be relinquishing any of your rights voluntarily because there is a trade-off there. And very fundamentally, the judge spoke out, even if a person wants to relinquish their inalienable human rights, the state or the prosecutor cannot accept this because they are inalienable. So you cannot relinquish your basic human rights, which is the right to conscious thought, the right to express yourself, the right the freedom of opinion, the freedom of religion. All these very basic fundamental human rights cannot be surrendered.
And maybe, Wilhelm, actually human is to do with citizen. You know, hue is the color of man, right? It's not actually the law. So anything human, legal and citizen is associated with this corporation, right? Not living men and women. So the law is associated with men and women, and then they are inalienable rights. So they're the ones that don't come from any treaty or anything, and they're the ones that they're being assaulted. So how we get over this is to know the difference between the law, men and women, people, boys and girls, and inalienable rights, and what their world is the dead corporation, which is human, the color of living people, but not the actual living form and citizens and the state. So they're all the dead corporations, and that's important for adverse events, right? And death, which Absolutely. We have now, is that if you're dead already in the legal system, that's why they don't give them any compensation, and that's why they're not investigating murder. That is the difference, is inalienable rights in the law of men and women, and that applies to every country in the world.
Well, I think the problem here is that whether you call it land at sea or land at law at land or law at sea, all these systems have to be upheld. Now, we see a lot of treaties confirming, and that's, I think, the point that you're trying to make. It's not granted by any institution, worldly institution. No, it is confirmed that we have inalienable human rights just by being human. But the problem we are having right now is that all these systems have been completely corrupted. So nobody is upholding these fundamental human rights. And that, I think, is a very important message to anyone listening or watching, is that there is no savior. There is no institution that will uphold these rights. We have to do that ourselves as a people, combining, of course, always peaceful, always embodying our true and highest values, which, in my opinion, are love, truth, and freedom, but with conviction that we will not accept any form of coercion or force.
Well said, Wilhelm. I mean, these are at the core of also the World Freedom Alliance and of so many people in the freedom movement. I think it's almost like an oath you give yourself. I know I've been speaking to so many. It's like, I will not, let myself be oppressed into something that is against these inalienable rights, sorry. So I think if we would all really stand firm in that and know our rights, and if we could support as many people as possible to know their rights and know how to stand up for these rights, I think, I mean, this is really the front line of like you say, there's no savior coming for you to do anything for you. We all have to know these rights and stand up for them. But I'm also thinking in all of these court cases that you've been to, and you're still, you know, really getting into the system and still, you know, getting the word out there and getting the message out there. Has there been any kind of response that or acknowledgement of these fundamental rights in the court system, or do you find it like completely corrupt? Or
it is completely corrupt, but and I think my 2 weeks in jail or in the penitentiary has shown me a few things. First of all, people watch the movie La Vita è Bella. This is how they are not able to break you mentally, psychologically, and spiritually. Also in a confined space, also when you're in isolation, because of course I could not take the test and I had to wear a face mask in order to talk to my lawyer. So I was isolated for 7 days, a few days of which I could not contact my lawyer because of these psychological games. Yeah. But your freedom in reality is here. And as long as you embody those values, they cannot break you, even if they lock you up. And then the second point, which was very helpful, all these systems, and I say at the moment, because of course this will change into AI and robotics, but all these systems are still run by human beings. Even the police officer that arrested me, when he handed me over at the police station, he said, "I am very happy that there's people like you, and I hope that you continue your work." Wow. All the guards in prison, they knew about the situation. They understood that I was a political prisoner. So they treated me with the utmost dignity, and they tried to help me get around the system as much as possible, handing me books, allowing me to call on their phones, trying to really go around the restrictions of the system to break you when you're incarcerated. And that shows me that there's a lot of people that are at least understanding that the system is corrupt, maybe not completely courageous that they are able to speak out already because they are in fear of losing their job, etc., but willing and wanting to help eat the system from the inside, to take off the edges, take off the corners. So one of the pillars of our organization is autonomization. And what we want to do with that is to give people the tools to take care of themselves, to take care of their loved ones and their family, and form communities. And I think one of the most inspiring symbols is what they did in East Germany right before the collapse of the wall. There were a lot of demonstrations where people started wearing their toothbrush on top of their jacket, and with that giving a signal, "I am not afraid. If you want to arrest me, come and arrest us all." Because every time when a political prisoner enters a police cell or enters a penitentiary, you talk to all these people, and these people have to carry out that system. And once these people don't want to carry out the system, it is undermined completely. So the more political activists we have in the prisons, the more we can, so to say, infect the system that oppresses us.
Yeah, I think that's very useful, Wilhelm. And I think, you know, the solution is as well that the people who are, you know, putting a hand on you or the court system, they're actually identifying themselves as the spearhead of criminal and unlawful activity, right? So in a way, you know, and they may have done this deal to say, "Well, I'll get promoted," or whatever it is, right? So they know what they're doing, right? And like, you know, Alexander Solzhenitsyn says, it's actually those individual people that in a way are doing a deal against their own children and against their grandchildren, you know, by doing actually it's not the command, as we've said before, It's the person who does the arrest and who brings you to the prison. They should just say, I am not going to administer this case of Wilhelm Engel, right? And so they are actually the people. I know we are nice to them and we're telling them,
exactly.
But they and history will hold them accountable. But how we push back on it is that the person whose name is on your arrest warrant or in the in your file, they are liable for the harm, right? And so part of the accountability is under the law, the person who does the harm, the man or woman, is liable. So the initiative now is about making the prosecutor and the judge, even though they are men and women, they may be fathers, they may be blackmailed, they may be coerced. If those two or three people said, no, I am not going to arrest Wilhelm Engel, this entire COVID-19 lockdown would be over. And therefore, holding them accountable financially and criminally is the solution under the law.
Yeah, and I think something else, what was very important for my release, was the switching or the shifting in the public opinion. And that was caused by all the activists, all the people who go to demonstrations, who bring the real news, were speaking out. And it made such a sound that they could not ignore it. I received over 10,000 physical letters in prison, completely flooding the mail system of the prison. It was in the newspaper every day. Amnesty International was forced to speak out on this subject. And that really shows where the power is, people power. If somebody of us gets arrested, we all get arrested. And we have to keep speaking out until such a person is freed. And this is also why I want to call on the people to protest and demonstrate coming Saturday, because there's a big demonstration for Julian Assange. And he was one of the front runners. He is one of those journalists who paid a very, very high price for his truth seeking and exposing of the lies and the corruption.
Yes.
And do you want to say where that is again? And we'll try and get the video out if you want to give details of that.
Yes, this is in Brussels and it's on the 23rd of April.
Great, amazing. Yeah, I think we have to, like, step one, we have to really accept that we live in censorship. We live in a country where, or in a Europe that is not the same at all, where we have political prisoners, where we have corruption, deep corruption in our leadership. And just the first step, just to realize it and to completely accept it and not to have some kind of belief that it will change or it will get better or we're just going to wait, or, you know, it's up to every single one of us to do this. And this is why, you know, we're getting World Freedom Alliance back to speed, and we're really focusing on how can we take aligned action together? How can we, through rallies, through education, through coming together on certain points, how can we make this aligned action super powerful? And I would like to ask you, Wilhelm, what would you suggest, or what would you like to see in World Freedom Alliance and in the aligned action that we can take together? What can we do in the coming years that would be the most effective focus we could have?
Yeah, I think our focus needs to shift a bit from informing the public and having an outcry, a moral outcry, which of course we should keep doing as well. But I think after 2 years, all the facts are known. All the people who still abide by the narrative are complicit. And of course, they're also victims, but we cannot keep saving them without saving ourselves. So the focus should be more on our own autonomy, creating our own communities, our own free states in that sense, to de-digitalize. And I would have never guessed 3 years ago that I would say this, but if you look at these communities which already have this independence, like the Amish community in the United States, that have really not taken the bait of this digitalized age and this electronic convenience, they have gone through this pandemic unscathed. They are almost unaffected. A lot of communities in Africa, same story. So we need to go back to our roots. What makes us human? What makes us human is not technology. It is not wealth. It is our set of moral values. It is our being together, our social interaction. And that is the core of our existence. And from there, we can take care of each other. And within that group, we can also defend ourselves and the ones we love against this tyranny and this mass surveillance state.
And also, Wilhelm, you have a lovely message and key principles that you talk about. If you want to just say them again, that they are, I think they really resonate for everyone in the world.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, because this message, especially around Easter, resonates so much with a lot of religious people, it shows the power of love. Because what is love, apart from an ideal, a feeling, it's also a strategy. By being, by embodying love, you attract people. You can always accept and master your emotions, so you don't fall for revenge or aggression or anger. Of course, everybody will have these emotions, but as long as you stay true to these higher emotions of love and freedom and truth, I think everybody can overcome. And with that, you are a beacon of light to others that you will attract. And by forming these communities, we will resist. Now, what I've been seeing the last few weeks is that finally Christians are speaking out, because this is about a moral dilemma. This has nothing to do with COVID. It's not a COVID crisis. It's a COVID scandal. It's a false flag operation to take away our inalienable rights. What religion could do and should do in this moment is bring people together, to use churches, mosques, synagogues, temples as the core of our resistance.
So true, Willem. I think that resonates with so many people, and that's actually one thing that I keep saying, that love will conquer all, because it's not this fluffy, you know, pink cloud love. It's the, you know, when you think of the love for your children, when you think of the love for your country, for this planet, that will take you through anything. I know, you know, we've been through a lot, all three of us, you know, during these 2 years, a lot of dramatic scenes, a lot of, you know, being on the front lines. But, you know, as soon as I just think about my children, and I know I have to fight for their future, there's no doubt. There's no doubt about the second next step. And of course, there's no doubt either that, you know, we have to build the community. I have to build resilience. I have to have a food supply. I have to have a community of people that can actually protect them. So that's actually what I'm doing here in Sweden, like right now, just moving to a farm, just building our, you know, food supply, yes. Everything. So that's something that the World Freedom Alliance will focus on very much in the coming years, and also in the online conference we'll have in the end of May. That's going to be one of the main subjects, actually, because I completely agree with you. All the evidence is out there. There's no more evidence needed. Now we just have to, you know, move on and create what we want to see.
Absolutely. If you want change in the world, be that change.
Exactly.
Yeah. And maybe I think, you know, part of the thing about holding it to account, I actually think we only need to nominate about 12 people per nation that are most liable, you know, and then coming from a place of love, but just show, we'll say one doctor, one teacher, one politician, one person dressed up as a police or the judge, that because they hold the liability as the men and women, because in a way they're benefiting, they are deciding to dress up as police and not engage in lawful activity, that this is coming from a loving place. Because if we don't, it's a bit like the Nuremberg trials. For all their flaws, they were showing for generations to come that you can't just say it's a regulation, I'm just following orders if you cause harm. So that I think part of the strategy should be that we just identify key people in each nation and key people who are harmed, and then that we support them.
Yeah.
And through that, we show that if one teacher or one doctor or one person dressed as a police or a judge is held criminally and financially liable, it's actually not that difficult under the law, right? It's not that difficult at all, that then that will resonate for all of the police, that everyone who got an unlawful summons or everyone who was injected, that those doctors will have to be accountable. So I think as well as us, you know, because if we get accountability back, we can then restore law and order, we can restore the health system and the logistics around proper healthy food and everything.
Absolutely. I think that will win this war. It is the accountability of all the vaccine injuries. This is a massive wave coming to hit the Agenda 2030. By accelerating that agenda with the election of Trump, because if you reconstruct the story, you see that they fast-tracked the whole program in 2016. They have taken an enormous gamble and they have failed. These injections are causing so much harm. And I'm willing to believe that it is not intentional, because you see the vaccine uptake completely falling to an absolute zero. People don't want the third or the fourth shot. The program has failed. It will not be possible to inject everybody in the world. And all those people who have been pushing like fanatics to get little children injected, they will be held accountable for the enormous amounts of injuries to ordinary people, but also to children. And that is coming home to roost, I'm sure, this year already.
It's becoming so obvious. I think by now most people know someone who's been injured or that has been killed, whether or not they consciously accept that that's the case. It's lingering there in the background, that they understand the severity of the situation, and it's not possible to like hide the
exactly
behind a carpet, under a carpet any longer. It's just not possible. So I think we can really look forward to a lot of people waking up on a different level. And then I'm very happy for the work that you're doing, Dolores, and everyone else in the whole freedom movement, in the World Freedom Alliance, and all over the world, because then we'll be there to give information, give some comfort, give our networks and humanity. Like me and Dolores often talk about, we need to remember being human again. We need to just de-brainwash and come back to the simplest things of being in compassion, in love, in caring, in just, you know, generosity for each other. That's the most important thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're not fighting against evil people. We are fighting to save our humanity, our human dignity. That's what this is about.
And Wilhelm, if you just wanted to maybe say what you're going to focus on maybe in this year, and then if you have any messages for people who, you know, may not, say if you were just someone who has either taken one shot or you're suddenly beginning to realize what's going on.
I think we have to create our own safe space, so that the people who are injured and who are willing to accept that they have made a terrible mistake are more than welcome, and we try to nurture them back to health. Another thing is that we have to really focus on that part of autonomy, specifically on the digital part, not using technology as a master, but using it as a tool. And what I mean with a master, social media and all the internet services, everything that is going digital with the QR code, with the RF cards or chips that are used in Sweden to do payments. This is not for our benefit. This is just for our convenience, but it's a convenient cage. We have to accept that life will be probably a bit less convenient. And that is the sacrifice we have to make for our freedom. So to make our digital footprint a lot smaller, to retract from all sorts of social media and internet services.
Yeah, for sure. Because what we put our energy on will grow. And if we, I think that's one of the greatest fears of the people trying to institute this. If we'll just withdraw and not spend, not give our energy, it's just like Hako Schoening says in the World Freedom Alliance, if we don't buy from them, we don't, you know,
exactly
all of this, we just withdraw our energy completely. What are they going to do?
But I think as well, what Wilhelm is saying is we can be quite innovative and use the tools that are there, but that if we are, we say, engaging with free media that supports inalienable rights, freedom of speech, that we can do it maybe for 1 hour a day, or that we, you know, put our business into hotels or cafes that are defending our inalienable rights and go to physiotherapists and doctors and dentists that guarantee to give full, free and informed consent, right? So that we can use it. But that on our terms and on the terms that we support freedom and health.
Mm, absolutely. Exactly. Great. Is there anything you would like to add, Willem, before we round this call up?
I think we have gotten the most important message out there. So don't fall for these false crises, whether they call it Ukraine or climate change. In the autumn, they will start with COVID-22. It's all a facade. Really listen to the voice within. Follow love, truth, and freedom. Trust yourself.
Great.
Wonderful. And maybe if you just want to give the web pages again, Wilhelm, that everybody can support you and hear about you directly.
It's viruswaarheid.nl, spelled viruswaarheid.nl.
Great. And you're also on the World Freedom Alliance homepage. You can find your page there and click onto it. And we really look forward to work with you, Willem, and really good luck with all the good work you're doing, Holland. And great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Willem. Wonderful.
Thank you.